But anyway, good morning. Good to see everyone today. And in my last sermon, we went into the study of the United States and Britain as we can see them in the Bible. And this is very interesting stuff, I think. I love this kind of stuff. This history stuff is what it is. And this is the continuation of part one. This is part two. And I just want to briefly recap part one. And, of course, we began part one with the genealogy of Abraham. And I've done that just to give us an idea of who he was and where he came from. And then in Genesis chapter 12, God chose and called Abraham. And this makes me think of the Protestant churches of the world to think anyone can go looking for God or Jesus Christ, find them, and then give their hearts to them to be saved, thus going to heaven when they die. And you can look all through the Bible and nowhere ever has any man decided to seek out God and Jesus Christ on their own without being called. It just didn't happen. Abraham didn't call up God and offer to serve God and do whatever God needed him to do. God just chose him because he saw something in Abraham that God could use. Then when God chose Abraham, he didn't immediately make a covenant with him. But first God tested Abraham to see if he would be faithful and loyal to God. And only then, when Abraham passed the test, then God made a covenant with him. And he promised Abraham a twofold promise. Promise of race and grace. A physical promise and a spiritual promise. And we see that in Genesis chapter 12, verse 2 and 3. So let's turn back there. Actually, I don't know if I've got the wrong one here. Just a second. And I went over it this morning and I didn't see this. Okay. I have to skip that. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 17. That may have been what I meant anyway, and I put chapter 12. Genesis chapter 17 and verse 1. Whatever happened, I've got a wrong verse wrote down here. We're going to read a few verses here, 1 through 7. When Abraham was 99 years old, the Eternal appeared to Abraham and said to him, I am Almighty God, walk before me and be blameless. I will make my covenant between me and you and will multiply you exceedingly. Then Abram fell on his face and God talked with him, saying, As for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be a father of many nations, more than one, many nations. No longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be Abraham, for I have made you a father of many nations. And there it is again, many nations, more than one. I will make you exceedingly fruitful, and I will make nations of you. There it is again. More than one nation, and kings, plural, shall come from you, more than one. And I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you in their generations for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and to your descendants after you. And notice that God didn't just make a covenant just with Abraham, but also to his descendants after him in all of their generations. Also, I give to you and your descendants after you the land in which you are a stranger, all the land of Canaan, as an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. And we saw just how big of an area that is with the map that I presented the last time, an area larger than the size of Texas. From the river of Egypt, which today is known as the Nile River, to the great river, the river Euphrates. That's found in Genesis chapter 15, verse 18, if you want to go back and look at that later. And again, this is a big area, larger than the size of Texas, not the little bitty tiny spot that they're in now. And God said to Abraham, "As for you, you shall keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you throughout their generations." There it is again. And again, God reaffirms that the covenant is between God, Abraham, and Abraham's descendants after Abraham in their generations. Now let's turn to Genesis chapter 22. We'll probably go over through a lot of scriptures. Genesis chapter 22, and we're going to start in verse 16. Now, this is just after God tested Abraham and said, "By myself I have sworn, says the Eternal, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, blessing I will bless you, and multiply I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven and as the sand which is on the seashore." Now notice how much God is going to multiply Abraham's descendants as the stars of heaven and as the sand which is on the seashore. That's talking about a bunch of people. That's a lot of people. Much more than the people that we see in the nation of Israel today. "And your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies." Verse 18, "In your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed." And this is the why, because you have obeyed my voice. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 28. In verse 14, "Also your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth." Another description to give us an idea of how many people that God is going to multiply Abraham. The dust of the earth has to be, I don't know, maybe even more of the sands of the seashore. The dust. I mean, you can't even see dust hardly unless there's a bunch of it. And then notice this, "You shall spread abroad to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south." Abraham's descendants are not going to stay in that one area that God gave them, even though it's a big area. God says that they're going to spread even further out than that area, to the north and to the south, to the east and to the west, in all directions. And again, God has given us an idea of how many people that will be. "And in you and in your seed, Christ, all the families of the earth shall be blessed." All of this because Abraham obeyed God and kept his end of the contract with God. Now let's go see this in Genesis chapter 26. So let's turn back to 26 and see exactly what Abraham was obedient to God about. Genesis chapter 26. In verse 5, and here's the why. "Because Abraham obeyed my voice, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." And the churches of the world like to claim that obeying God's commandments is a sin somehow. And how can they claim that when we can very plainly see how God blessed Abraham so much for obeying him? Now all of a sudden it's a sin to be obedient to God according to the world. And it's not that hard to see unless I guess you've been spiritually blinded. So that's a recap of the first part of the message that I gave a few weeks ago. So let's continue on now with this study of the United States and Britain in the Bible. And let's back up to Genesis 22. Yeah, we're in 26. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 22 and verse 17, because there's one very important piece of information here that's easily read right over. Genesis chapter 22, verse 17. And it says, "That in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore. and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. Now, what is a gate that's being referred to here? Geographically, a gate refers to the key entrances to the world's oceans and control points along the way of the major global shipping lanes. Examples of such sea gates are the Suez Canal, Strait of Gibraltar, Aden, Malta, Singapore, and the Panama Canal. In their rise to national prominence, Britain and the United States acquired control of almost every strategic land and sea gate in the world. And you remember hearing about the Suez Canal just a few weeks ago, or a few months ago? Everyone was panicked because a very large container ship that was blocking the canal. You could see pictures, aerial pictures of that thing. It blocked the entire thing. They couldn't pass. They couldn't go through. Now, here's some information about the Suez Canal just to give you an idea of how important these sea gates are. The 120-mile man-made waterway cuts through Egypt to connect the Mediterranean Sea to the Red Sea, and by extension, the Atlantic and the Indian Oceans. That makes it a key transit point for ships moving goods between Asia and Europe and the eastern United States. It entered service in 1869. That's a long time. 45 years before the Panama Canal, which is much shorter, linking the Pacific and the Atlantic Ocean. The Sea Level Canal, still talking about the Suez, is the longest in the world without locks, with a normal transit time from end to end of about 13 to 15 hours. It's pretty long. About 12% of the world trade passes through the canal each year. Everything from crude oil to grains to instant coffee. Without the Suez Canal, a supertanker carrying Mideast crude oil to Europe would have to travel an extra 6,000 miles around Africa's Cape of Good Hope, adding some $300,000 in fuel cost alone. And because it has no locks, it can even handle aircraft carriers. Just about every good imaginable, adding up in 2019 to 1.03 billion tons of cargo, according to the Suez Canal Authority. That's roughly four times more than passed through the Panama Canal. The canal's location makes it a key link for shipping crude oil and other hydrocarbons from countries such as Saudi Arabia to Europe and North America. Among other goods, 54.1 million tons of cereal pass through the canal, 53.5 million tons of ores and metals, 35.4 million tons of coal and coke in 2019. More than 80% of the world trade volume is transported via waterways or seaborne trade. And that's why the importance of these canals, these sea gates. Lots of crude oil passes through these gates every year. As we all know, the world operates on crude oil. And that's why it's so important that we don't have to import crude oil here in the United States from other nations instead of drilling for our own, especially importing it from our enemies, which we're doing now, it seems. Mr. Armstrong always told us to watch the Middle East when talking about the end of the age, or when the end of the age would come. He always said that things would start happening in the Middle East. He also indicated that he thought that the Great Tribulation could possibly start over crude oil. The world gets a lot of crude oil from the Middle East. We are now, again, from China, Russia even. And for the last few years, the United States didn't have to worry about all that, importing crude oil from other nations, because we had become energy independent. We were producing our own crude oil instead of relying on everyone else for it, even from our enemies. But now, It seems that this is quickly going away. This is changing. With the change of government in the United States this year, more restrictions have been placed on this nation, restricting our ability to produce our own crude oil and forcing us to buy it once again from other nations, including our enemies. If we're importing it from other nations, guess where all that crude oil is going to travel through? The gates, canals. All of our oil that we're importing is going to come through these gates. And the United States and Britain don't have much control over these gates anymore. Almost none. We've lost control of almost all of them over the years. And what could happen if we're no longer able to use these gates? Worldwide catastrophe. And that's why Mr. Armstrong said that it could be very possible that World War III could be started over crude oil. And that's what a huge blessing it was for God to give Abraham, that his descendants would possess these gates of their enemies. And God repeated this blessing to Rebekah, the wife of Isaac. If you'll turn to Genesis chapter 24, he repeats this blessing once more to Rebekah. Genesis chapter 24 and verse 60. And they blessed Rebekah and said to her, "Our sister, may you become the mother of thousands of ten thousands." The King James Version says thousands of millions. "And may your descendants possess the gates of those who hate them." And again, another indication of the amount of people that these blessings are given to. One other very important point to make is about this blessing. This has never been fulfilled in the Jews. Never. So this prophecy would have to be for today, this present day that we live in. And also this prophecy is talking about many, many people forming more than one nation. Many nations. They're all one people, all children of Abraham. And these promises, these prophecies were repeated to Abraham's sons. They were passed down to Isaac and Jacob. And let's see, Genesis chapter 26, over a couple chapters, starting in verse 3. This is God speaking to Isaac, Abraham's son. "Dwell in this land," verse 3, "and I will be with you and bless you, for to you and your descendants I give all these lands. And I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father." So notice here, God is passing the promises that he made to Abraham, to Abraham's son, Isaac. "And I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to your descendants all these lands." And the King James Version says, "And will give you unto thy seed all these countries. And in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed." In verse 5, once again, God tells why he is giving these blessings to Abraham and his descendants. "Because Abraham obeyed my voice, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." That's the why. And then in verse chapter 27, go down one chapter. Chapter 27 and verse 28. This is Isaac handing this down to Jacob. "Therefore, may God give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth." Other translations say the richness of the earth, "and plenty of grain and wine." Notice that now Jacob and his descendants are being blessed with material promises of wealth from the ground, in addition to all the other promises that God made to Abraham and then Isaac. And now it's passing down to Jacob. And then in verse 29, the prophecy that the heathen nations will be ruled by the birthright nations of Israel. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you. And then drop down to chapter 28. And in verse 13, this is God speaking to Jacob in a vision that Jacob had after Isaac had blessed him and sent him away. This took place whenever Jacob had lay down to sleep on the ground because he was traveling. It had become night. And he put this rock under his head to sleep on for a pillow. Now this stone that he laid his head on has many names. It's been called the Stone of Jacob, Jacob's Pillow Stone, Stone of Scone, Stone of Destiny, Coronation Stone. Stone, let's see, I already said the Stone of Scone, Stone of Destiny, and it's supposedly this very stone still exists today in Scotland. And that's a whole other story that I'm going to get into, of course, later when I continue this. Verse 28, verse 13, and behold, the Eternal stood above it and said, I am the Eternal God of Abraham your father and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and your descendants. And then verse 14, now notice this very important fact. Also, your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west, to the east, to the north, and to the south. And in you, and in your seed, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. This is a prophecy that the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob will be such a large multitude that their numbers will spread around the world. The term spread abroad in Strong's, it's H6555, and it means to burst out, to break through, to burst open, to spread. And this prophecy makes no limits on how far these people could spread around the earth. And we can back this up in the New Testament, if you keep your finger here, because we're going to spend more time here, and turn over to Romans chapter 4. Romans chapter 4 and verse 13. For the promise that he would be the heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. Now this is Paul saying that Abraham and his descendants would be the heir of the world. Now this has a dual meaning. One, it doesn't mean that Abraham's descendants would possess the whole entirety of the earth and not leave anything for anybody else, but that they would spread and occupy various parts all over the world. And two, but after the millennium, the earth will only be inhabited by those who are Abraham's children through Christ, spiritual children. Now let's go back to Genesis chapter 28. Genesis chapter 28 and verse 15. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go. Remember, Jacob's descendants were prophesied to spread around the world in various places, and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you. And this prophecy will be filled, of course, at the second coming of Christ. And this is an very extensive prophecy that I'm not going to go into this right now either, but you can read a lot about this in Jeremiah chapter 23, chapter 50, and a whole load of other prophecies. And of course, we'll be hearing more about that. Feast of Trumpets coming up not too long. Now let's go to Genesis chapter 35. And here, God is giving some definition of what he meant when he promised that Abraham's descendants would become many nations. Genesis chapter 35 and verse 11. Also, God said to him, I am Almighty. I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. Now notice this. A nation and a company of nations shall proceed from you, and kings shall come from your body. Other translations say many nations, a community of nations, an assembly of nations, a multitude of nations, or a group of nations. So the many nations are to eventually become one great, wealthy, powerful nation. And then another company of nations. Now think about this prophecy for a minute. This has never been fulfilled in the Jews, ever. The Jews have never become a great, powerful, wealthy nation and a company of nations that is spread around the world. It's never happened. But that's what the Christian world will tell you. They'll tell you that, yeah, this was all fulfilled in the Jews, but it never was. All you have to do is look in history. Now, these prophecies are astonishing, and yet the world is oblivious to the truth of these prophecies. They think that these prophecies were fulfilled in the Jews, which include the Jews of today and the nation of Israel that we see today. But they weren't. Nowhere in history can you find that any of these prophecies were fulfilled by the Jews. It doesn't exist. And yet we know that these prophecies have to come to pass, because God said that they would. And if you'll turn to Luke chapter 21, Luke chapter 21 and verse 33. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. And God promised that these things would happen. So they will happen. So we know that these prophecies are true because they came from God, and that His prophecies will happen. They will come to pass. Why? Because God has a plan. He doesn't do something for absolutely no reason. Everything He does for a reason. He has a plan. So far, we have seen that God chose Abraham and called him. And we know why God chose him, because he was faithful and he did obey God. And because of that, God blessed Abraham greatly. And not only did he bless Abraham, but the same blessings passed down to Abraham's descendants as well. And we've read many scriptures proving all that. Another very important fact to keep in mind is that these blessings were twofold. There were twofold blessings. And I did briefly cover that in part one, but you can easily prove this in the scriptures that we've been reading. Promises of a spiritual and physical blessings. The spiritual promise of the one seed, Christ, and of salvation through Christ, through Him. This is referred to in the Bible as the scepter promise. And a scepter is a rod or baton carried by someone in authority. You tend to see that a lot in movies, such as a king or an emperor. Even in paintings, they'd be holding this rod, and it usually have some kind of an ornamental thing on top of it. And then the physical promises of national wealth, prosperity, and of great power, even owning the gates of his enemies, and that his descendants would be numerous as the stars of heaven or as the sands of the seashore. Also the dust of the earth, we've seen. Owning much land, and also many nations around the world. This is what is called in the Bible, as we know it as, the birthright promises. Now, what's the difference between the two? Between a birthright and the scepter promise, the two separate promises. A birthright is something that you have a right to from birth, of course, or a privilege, a possession, something that is passed down to you. An example would be a farm or a house that was passed down to you from your family. Sometimes it's something that's passed down to the oldest child or maybe the oldest son, especially back in biblical days of Abraham, where birthrights did pass down to the oldest son. That's the way they done it in those days. But it's something that you have a right to from birth, your birthright. And a birthright has absolutely nothing to do with grace. Grace is something that was given to you as a gift. It's not something that you have a right to from birth. So if I have a chocolate bar, and I'm going to give it to one of you all, it's a gift from me. It's not something that you had a right to from birth. Can't have my chocolate bar. A scepter is a symbol or an emblem of royal power or kingly office. God's promise of a kingly line, scepter, in which Christ would also come from, in which the whole world would be blessed. That is grace. It's not something that we earn. It's a gift from God. And we see that in Galatians chapter 3. I think I mentioned this in the other sermon too. Galatians chapter 3 and verse 8. And the Scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel to Abraham beforehand, saying, in you all the nations shall be blessed. And in verse 16, drop down. Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He does not say unto seeds, plural, as many, but as of one, and to your seed, who is Christ. And both of these promises were made to Abraham from God unconditionally. And we see that again in Genesis chapter 22, if you'll go back over there. Genesis chapter 22 and verse 15. Then the angel of the Eternal called to Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, by myself I have sworn, says the Eternal, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, blessing I will bless you, and multiplying I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven and as the sand which is on the seashore, and your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. In your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. And here's the why, again, because you have obeyed my voice. Now notice how God doesn't say, I will bless you if you do this or that, because Abraham had already proved himself to God. So now God is telling Abraham that he will bless Abraham with these things. And as we all know, if God promises something, he will do it. And these same promises, the birthright promise and the scepter promise, were re-promised by God to Abraham's son Isaac and then to Isaac's son Jacob, whose name was later changed to Israel. Now here's a very important fact that the world completely looks right over. These two different promises became separate. The scepter, the promise of the kingly line in which Christ would come from, would be given to Judah, the son of Jacob, or Israel. King David was of the tribe of Judah. And all of the succeeding kings of David's dynasty were from the tribe of Judah. Jesus Christ was of the tribe of Judah. But the birthright was never given to the tribe of Judah, or the Jews. Another important fact that the world completely misunderstands is the fact that the Jews do not make up the house of Israel. They forget that Jacob had 12 sons. In those days, each son made up his own tribe when he began his own family. So the 12 sons of Jacob became the 12 tribes of Jacob, or the 12 tribes of Israel. Most people think that the Jews in Israel today are the house of Israel. But they're wrong. They're not. The Jews in Israel today consist only of the tribes of Judah, Levi, and Benjamin. The sons of Jacob, or Israel, were Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph, and Benjamin, in that order. All of these sons and their families made up the tribes of Israel, or the house of Israel, for the time being, because there was a split that would come later. And remember, a birthright usually gets handed down to the firstborn son in those days, or at least at that time. The birthright never went to Jacob's firstborn, which would have been Reuben. And we'll see that in 1 Chronicles. 1 Chronicles chapter 5. We'll turn over there. Now the sons of Reuben, in 1 Chronicles chapter 5 and verse 1, the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, he was indeed the firstborn. And here's why Reuben did not receive the birthright. But because he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel, so that the genealogy is not listed according to the birthright. That's why Israel's firstborn did not get the birthright. So what happened was, it's a story, that Reuben slept with his father Jacob's concubine, Bilhah. And this wasn't just any concubine, because Jacob had two sons with Bilhah, two of Reuben's half-brothers. And we see this, keep your finger here, I think. No, I came back there. Yeah, we do. Keep your finger here and turn to Genesis chapter 35. There's even lots of drama back in those days. Genesis chapter 35, and look at verse 22. And it happened, when Israel dwelt in that land, that Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard about it. So this little incident caused Reuben to lose the birthright. So, who did it go to instead? Back to 1 Chronicles chapter 5, and verse 2. Yet Judah prevailed over his brothers, and from him came a ruler, although the birthright was Joseph's. Joseph was given the birthright instead of Jacob's firstborn son, Reuben. The birthright was never given to the Jews. Never. But the scepter always stayed with Judah. And we see that in Genesis chapter 49, if you'll turn over there. This is where the split, the two blessings were split. Genesis chapter 49 and verse 10. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people. And remember, the scepter promise, meaning a symbol or an emblem of royal power, or a kingly office. God's promise of a kingly line would go through the tribe of Judah, or the Jews. The Jews is just a nickname of the tribe of Judah. The scepter shall not depart from Judah. And then the birthright promise. Physical promises of national wealth, prosperity, and of great power. even owning the gates of his enemies, and that his descendants would be numerous as the stars of heaven or as the sands of the seashore, owning a lot of land, and also many nations around the world. All of this would go through the tribe of Joseph. That's the birthright. Two separate promises going through two separate tribes of Israel, or sons of Israel. This important fact is vital in understanding who the house of Israel is and who the Jews are today, and that the tribes of Israel are separate from one another. They're not one people. They're different people. They're different tribes, although they are brothers and half-brothers, having the same father, Abraham. But they're different tribes. They're different people. And this is an important truth that we all understand, but the world has no idea, and they don't understand any of that. And that's why the world doesn't understand who the Jews are today and who the house of Israel is today. They think they're all the same. But they're not. Even though it's explained very clearly in our Bibles with the scriptures that we just read. But then again, the world doesn't believe in the Old Testament either. They think that it's just a collection of stories. And because of their ignorance, they just misunderstand. And yet this is the very key to unlocking the understanding and knowledge of who the United States and Britain are, and just where they are mentioned in the Bible. The key of David is what we know it as. Revelation chapter 3, if you'll turn over there. Revelation chapter 3 and verse 7. And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, "These things says he who is holy, he who is true, he who has the key of David, he who opens and no one shuts, shuts and no one opens. This was written to us, the Philadelphia era of the Church of God, the key of David." And that's also why most people in the world don't understand biblical prophecy. They might understand, you know, a little part here, a little part there, but that's about it. And they don't have good understanding of even that. And the reason is they don't have the key. They don't understand who we are. But God's church has that very vital, important key. God has given us that understanding. Here's one very interesting fact. Once again, in those days, usually the birthright was passed down to the oldest son. But in the case of Abraham, that didn't happen. The birthright did not go to the oldest son of Abraham, and there was a good reason for that. We're talking about Abraham again. If you'll turn to Genesis chapter 16. The birthright did not pass down to Abraham's oldest son. Genesis chapter 16 and verse 1. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, he hadn't been named Abraham yet, he's still Abram, had borne him no children. Up until now, Abram had no children. Sarai, Abraham's wife, was barren and could not have children. And we see that in Genesis chapter 11. Keep your finger here. Turn over there. Genesis chapter 11. And verse 30. And it says, "But Sarai was barren. She had no child." She was barren. She couldn't have children. Now let's go back where we was. If you held your place, Genesis chapter 16, verse 1. And the end of this scripture is the perfect example of man not waiting on God and trying to fix a situation by himself. "And she had an Egyptian maid servant whose name was Hagar." Now this situation of Abraham not having children is about to take a drastic turn. Verse 2. Now Sarai said to Abram, "See now, the Eternal has restrained me from bearing children. Please go unto my maid, perhaps I shall obtain children by her." And Abraham heeded the voice of Sarai. So Sarai, which was her name at that time, her name hadn't been changed yet, she's about to try to fix this situation of her and Abram not being able to have children. And of course, Abraham's probably thinking to himself, well, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. What could possibly go wrong? But if you remember, back in chapter 17, we read that God promised Abraham, "I will make you exceedingly fruitful, and I will make nations of you. Kings shall come from you. I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you and their generations. Also, I give to you and your descendants the land in which you are a stranger." And God made these promises to Abraham at that time many times, because God promised him that they would have many descendants. So they knew they were supposed to have children, but Sarai was barren. She couldn't have any. So they tried to fix the situation by themselves. So what did they do? Verse 3. Then Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan. So he, Abram, went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress became despised in her eyes. Who saw that coming? One other point I want to make here, that, and this is a little off topic, but a lot of people will look at these scriptures, and they do, people of the world, and they like to say, well, you see, God let men in the Old Testament have multiple wives. And they'll use this to say that either it's really okay to have multiple wives, or this is proof that adultery is okay, which to them is more proof that the commandments were done away with, or that everything in the Old Testament is completely wrong. That's why you can't go by anything written in the Old Testament. But they're overlooking one very important fact here. This thing was Sarai's and Abram's idea. It had absolutely nothing to do with God. This is what they came up with. God doesn't strike us down immediately after making a mistake. He'll let us make mistakes and then hopefully learn from those mistakes. If He did strike us down after making a mistake, we would never make it to an age old enough to even be able to have children of our own. We wouldn't make it that far. And then look at the last part of verse 4. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress became despised in her eyes, and almost immediately problems ensued. Then Sarai, in verse 5, said to Abram, "My wrong be upon you. I gave my maid into your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, I became despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and you." So Abram said to Sarai, "Indeed, your maid is in your hand. Do to her as you please." And when Sarai dealt harshly with her, she fled from her presence. Now the angel of the Eternal found her, Hagar, by a spring of water in the wilderness, by the spring on the way to Shur. In verse 8, he said, "Hagar, Sarai's maid, where have you come from? And where are you going?" She said, "I'm fleeing from the presence of my mistress, Sarai." The angel of the Eternal said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit yourself unto her hand." Now, one very important thing to remember here as we read these next few verses. These next few verses are talking about the descendants of Ishmael, Sarai's maid, Hagar's son. This is the son that Hagar and Abram had together. And who are the descendants of Ishmael today? The Arab people of the Middle East. Most of the people and the nations that surround Israel today. Now keep that in mind as we read this. Verse 10. Then the angel of the Eternal said to her, I will multiply your descendants exceedingly, so that they shall not be counted for multitude. And the angel of the Eternal said to her, Behold, you are with child, and you shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Eternal has heard your affliction. He shall be a wild man, in verse 12. His hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand against him, and he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. Now I'm going to read this last verse in the New Living Translation. And this really translates this verse very well, especially for us today as we see things and hear about things happening in the news. Now this is that same verse translated, New Living Translation. This son of yours will be a wild man, as untamed as a wild donkey. He will raise his fist against everyone, and everyone will be against his. Yes, he will live in open hostility against all his relatives. And this makes me think of what is happening in and around Israel today that we can see on the news almost every single day. And this has been going on for decades. And Mr. Armstrong said that the correct translation of this verse says, they will live to the east of their brethren. And that must be in the Moffat translation, because you can't find the Moffat translation Bible anywhere I've looked. People have it. I think Mr. Shannon's got one. I'd like to have one. And the Amplified Bible Classic Edition has the more correct translation, and it says, this is the Amplified Bible Classic Edition, and he, Ishmael, will be as a wild donkey. It says another word, but I'm going to say donkey. Among men. His hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him. And he will live to the east and on the borders of his kinsmen. So there are two key factors that we can see here that will give us the true identity of Ishmael's descendants today. One, Ishmael's descendants would be a great nation, but the birthright nations would be even greater than Ishmael's descendants. And two, they would dwell to the east of their brethren. Their brethren refers to Isaac's descendants, or the birthright nations. And the birthright nations would be larger, wealthier, and much more powerful. And it must be found west of the descendants of Ishmael, or the Arabs. Now, if you look on a map, and I thought about putting one up, but I didn't. If you look on a map of that region in those days, and still today, the area directly to the east of Jerusalem is Arabia. Great big nation. Now, verse 15 of Genesis chapter 16. So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram named his son, whom Hagar bore, Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abram. So Ishmael was the result of Abraham, or Abram, sleeping with Sarai's Egyptian handmaid, Hagar. She was an Egyptian. And this was conjured up by Sarai, and Abram. God had nothing to do with this thing. Then God said to Abram, as for Sarai, turn to Genesis chapter 17. Sorry about that, I missed that. Genesis chapter 17. and verse 15. Then God said to Abraham, "As for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name." God changed her name to Sarah. "And I will bless her and also give you a son by her," by Sarah. "Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of peoples shall be from her." And here again, God is reaffirming the covenant that he made with Abraham. And what was Abraham's response to this? Verse 17, "Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said in his heart, 'Shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? And shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child?'" He thought it was pretty comical. He didn't show a whole lot of faith in God here, but he will later. But for now, Abraham thought that God just had a big sense of humor, saying that a woman of 90 years would bear him a child. In verse 18, "And Abraham said to God, 'Oh, that Ishmael might live before you.' Then God said, 'No, Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his descendants after him.'" Abraham wanted Ishmael to be the heir of God's promises to Abraham, but Abraham didn't have anything to do with what God wanted. God had a plan, the same plan that he had even then. But Abraham didn't really understand that. He couldn't see the full scope of God's plan. Verse 20, "And as for Ishmael, I have heard you. Behold, I have blessed him. I will make him fruitful and will multiply him exceedingly. He shall beget 12 princes, and I will make him a great nation. But my covenant I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear to you at this set time next year." God even told Abraham when Sarah would even have Isaac. And again, God had a plan. He had it all planned out, and his plan included Isaac, not Ishmael. The blessings that God had promised Abraham and the covenant that God made with Abraham would pass down through Isaac, the son that God would bless Sarah with. The blessings and the covenant would not pass through Ishmael, Abraham's firstborn. That's Abraham's firstborn child. Why? Because that's not the way that God wanted to do it. Abraham and Sarah tried to fix the situation themselves, but God had other plans, which goes to show us that we cannot interfere with or change what God has planned, because we don't know the plan that God has for us. We got an idea. We know certain things about God's plan that we learn from the Bible, the Word of God, but we don't know all of His plan. That's why we must have the faith in God that reassures us that God indeed knows what He's doing. And we know absolutely nothing about what we're doing, but God knows. And we must trust God that He will do what is the best for all of us. And that's about it for this one. My time's up, and I will continue on with this in the near future.